Welcome to the third episode of the Participation Coaching Podcast with Greg Brody. Hello everyone, this is Wojciech from participationcoaching.com and today my guest is Greg Brody. Greg is a full stack coach. He coaches everyone from beginner to a two player, and we mainly discuss the differences between participation and performance coaching, as Greg knows both really, really well. He's learned many methods. He visited many different coaches. He's one of the first to achieve PGA of Great Britain Level 4 qualification, and he talks about it a little bit as well. We talk about why coaches need a large toolbox of skills, what golf can learn from other sports, what Greg does with complete beginners on the first lesson, books Greg recommends to parents in his junior academy. We talk a little bit about injury prevention and why it's a crucial skill to have, especially when you do performance coaching. We talk about professionalization of golf coaching and the dangers knowing just a little bit about a subject like fitness. And we talk a lot about the future of golf and how coaches could potentially make it brighter than it looks right now. But enough of the talking, let's get into the show. Hope you enjoy it. So what's your background? Like, if you were to describe your history in five sentences, what would you say? And what do you do now as well?
I'd say my background is predominantly coaching. I coach full time now. And my journey has been for the last 20 years to accumulate the largest toolbox I can of as many coaching skills as I can. So hopefully, if I was to describe briefly where I'm at now, I hope I'm quite diverse, i.e. I work with very young juniors at the weekends all the way through to full-time touring professionals. That would be my background. I've gone through the Level 4 coaching journey with the PGA. So I've had an academic journey. I've also extensively traveled the globe, hanging out with some of the best coaches and best programs in the world. So hopefully I have a relatively balanced view on things and certainly a rather large toolbox to call on as and when needed.
This is something unique about you, isn't it? That in this age of specialization, you decided not to do it in a way.
Yeah, I never bought into that. You know, people seem to want to pigeonhole you and you must specialize in this and right coach, right place, right time. I've never wanted to be that person. I've always wanted to be the person that can coach whoever. And that's fascinated me for a long time. And I'm not saying up against a specialist in child development that I have the dedication that they have over 20 years naturally, but I certainly feel I can do a pretty good job across the spectrum. It would appear now that I am being sucked into more of the performance element. So working with national programs, a lot of elite level golfers, doing a lot of 3D motion capture, working very closely with physiotherapists, biomechanists, trainers and so forth. But I still love the participation element of golf. And I think, in my opinion, the future is there. I think for most young coaches, if anyone's listening to this, the future is undeniably in participation, because without that, golf will die. And I think people still look at golf pros, you know, you if you're on tour, then you're a great golf coach. I really hope the culture shifts away from that to a great golf coach is the person that managed to bring 100 members to a golf club, 100 new golfers into golf. That I really hope we see a shift in the next decade to appreciate the absolute brilliance and talent of participation coaches, because otherwise this game will die. You know, the average age of golfers playing now is what, certainly in the UK, is over 65. Yeah. And with 7%, I believe, of club membership being juniors, that there's going to be this huge gap, in my opinion. And unless we all, everybody that's involved in golf, starts pulling together, I think we're going to see an almighty gap where we're going to lose a lot of golf clubs. And I'm not catastrophizing here. I think it's a real issue and we need to do something about it now. So participation, junior coaching, inclusion, all of that stuff to me becomes almost a priority for coaches. Otherwise, there will be no one to coach.
That's exactly my reason behind starting this project. And it's funny that even though many people talk about it, it's still incredibly difficult to for example, find coaches that are really good in the participation realm.
I absolutely agree. And hence, great guys such as yourself are the future. It's interesting. I think what we need to do in golf is look away from golf and look into other sports and how they do it. It's interesting that we don't use marketing companies a huge amount in golf, do we? Or certainly when we're training in golf coaching, we're told a lot about how to be very prescriptive and that kind of deterministic approach to coaching. You must do this. But we don't look at marketing and we don't look at how the human learns, and we certainly don't look at their experience, do we? That's been my experience anyway. I don't think we see enough of that. And maybe we need a cultural shift into educating coaches differently. I'll give you an example. Fiona Brown, who's a wonderful, wonderful professional involved with the PGA in the UK, chose something that she was no good at, and that being running. So she joined a running club. Now, the running club called her 3 times in a week just to check she was still good and happy. They called her the night before. She turned up in the car park for the first time, full of fear and trepidation. Somebody was there to meet her, tapping on a window saying, "Oh, hi, you must be Fiona." They took her out. The captain ran with her for the first week. They contacted her the day after to say, "How was it?" 3 times during that week. She is now running the marathon this year. And I think it's one of the greatest success stories. But what I took from it, listening to it, was we don't do that in golf. We don't look at the human being enough, in my opinion. And maybe that's something we really need to think about as coaches and as an industry on the whole.
Yeah, the customer service aspect of it. I've been reading a book. It was a restaurant owner, and like some of his, it sounded like very basic hospitality stuff that in golf, especially with newcomers, like it just doesn't exist.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that's without even mentioning, you know, we open up a whole new debate then, you know, academically, if you want to talk about a constructivist approach or non-linear pedagogist's approach to coaching, or in the real world, should we be putting any rules on these new golfers? So there's too many rules, isn't it? You must hold it like this, you must do this. Well, there's A, no acknowledgement to their past history, their anatomy. And should we be facilitating, as coaches, facilitating learning more, letting them explore and push boundaries as newcomers with no rules? Should we be getting them on the golf course and making it fun and just allowing them room to breathe as such, rather than, I mean, look at it at the moment. Your average place is a 4-week course for £40 or whatever, get into golf. First week grip, second week posture. It's like, oh, seriously? You know, what an experience for these people the first time they get into it. The same with kids, you know, talking to a kid about face and alignment and lining them all up. I mean, seriously, at this day and age, I think we're in trouble if we're going about it in that way.
How did you start playing golf, out of interest?
I was in Scotland. So I was brought up in Scotland, born in Dundee, and then moved to Ayr. So I was on both coasts of Scotland. And exactly that. I went out with my mum and I just played, you know, not huge amounts of instruction. I just had fun, just worked it out. And then I got bitten by the bug. Certainly, I moved down to England at about 10. And about 11, 12, I was playing multiple sports, so tennis, football, rugby. I was a good swimmer. Really got into golf. And, didn't really have huge amount of lessons as a junior, just kind of thrashed it out. Just had a couple of pointers here and there. I've read Jack Nicklaus's 3 books. You know, they were my sort of go-to, and watched a lot of videos back in the day, VHS, pausing it, looking in the mirror, but just kind of worked it out. And I think when you look at human learning, that's the way of it, isn't it? It's experiential learning. We've got to give golfers that breathing space to do that, rather than telling them, you must do this, you must do that. Certainly the newcomers. We'll talk about elite golfers later, but yeah, to me, that's the way it has to be.
So going back to beginners, in an ideal world, what would you do when a beginner comes to you? Like, or what do you do?
So for me, with a beginner, first of all, maybe talk a little bit about the fact that there's not going to be rules put on them, that we're all different, we all learn differently, we all have different experiences. I would ideally take them to a golf course and show them this is the game of golf. This is what we're heading towards. Give them the choice. So then what would they actually go out and have a putt? Or I'm very lucky at my facility that I can do that. Or they might want to tackle a bunker shot. Or if they wanted to start, let's say, on a driving range hitting balls, I would literally give them a club and ask them just to hit a few shots. As bizarre as it sounds, not telling them anything. And then just get them to reflect on the experience. So if they missed it, I'd ask them questions such as, well, where did you miss that? And if you were not going to miss it, what would you have to do? Or if you were going to miss that again, how would you do it deliberately? And almost just guide them through working out for themselves. I don't know, like many beginners, maybe there was a significant change in posture. So there was sort of a deformation in that posture, or they stood up a lot, or whatever it is. And I would just guide them. I'd question them a lot and let them work out a lot of the issues themselves. I think they need to understand the problem they're trying to solve. So I might use – the only time I'd use video is, one, so they can see it maybe, and two, I'd show them some slow motion footage of how an iron interacts with the ball, because a lot of people, I think, have a misconception about the fact that you don't hit down and through the ball. Maybe they feel they've got a scoop underneath it. And if you imagine without being armed with that information as a total newcomer to the game, that must be pretty hard to come up with answers, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. Have you experienced people sort of not accepting this approach? So in a way, when you tell them that it's up to them now and they can do whatever they want at the beginning, have you ever had anyone tell you, wait a second, just tell me what I should do?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly with juniors. So the junior program I run, I know you've had Neil Plimmer speak. I run a golf program at my facility. So certainly some parents just don't get it. So number one, or if you're actually with the golfer, they can feel quite uncomfortable being questioned. Mm-hmm. And there are times where you've got to step back and let them work it out. Some people don't like that. I think two things there. It's really it comes down to the golf coach. I think there is a sliding scale of when you allow and tell. And sometimes you've just got to maybe give a bit. As an example, you might give them two options. So you might give them a choice. So you might say, maybe you might even get in there and almost from a kinesthetic point of view, give them a feel of, well, would you deliver it like this or would you deliver it like that? So you might actually, I think that's the art of any good coach, is you're reading the session, you're reading the human. You can understand when they're either tiring of that or starting to, or maybe they're not the kind of human that likes that approach, in which case you might want to adapt the session somewhat. Again, I think you've got to be versatile. You can't be so bloody minded that you're going to stick to that's the way I'm going to coach because it's right, and because then I think it's your session, not theirs. And it's your ego, not theirs. So there are times when I feel you've maybe got to get in and give them choices, but I'm just not so sure about these kind of prescriptive models and you must swing it there. Why? Because that's not what we see with the best players in the world, is it? We see a whole plethora of different movements. Well, that wasn't born out of being told you must position it there, then there, surely. Good question. Same with juniors. I think you've got to try and educate the parents. I'd ask a parent, you know, do you really think that's the best way to go about this? So have a similar conversation to the one we're having now. But yeah, I would say you have to be versatile. There are times, and particularly as we'll discuss in a minute with elite golfers, I think there's a very different approach. I don't think that necessarily works with them.
Do you do any sort of meetings or presentations for the parents to talk about these sort of problems? Or
yeah, absolutely. I also I don't know about other coaches that are listening to this, but I encourage the parents to be involved with all the sessions, because I think that's the best way to go about. One, I think they like being involved. Two, if they're there, you can educate them. And three, they then, it's funny how they almost take on the same role and the same teaching style as you. So they actually then start supporting the child better. I also have educational videos that I've done for the parent and suggested reading. So things like, let's think about the Goldmine Effect as an example of a book. You know, stories of footballers that were destined to be the very best in the world that now play second division Scandinavian league, I think. I think anyone that gets overexcited as a parent, maybe they have someone that's young doing well. I always get them to read that kind of thing. Mindset by Cal Dweck. I like them to read that so that they understand a lot more about how to praise their child and how they can support them and the dangers of those kind of fixed mindsets, particularly with kids that are pretty good at golf. Yeah, I think the parents need real support there.
Like sticking with beginners for a moment.
Yep.
Do you think, like it's sort of a bit of a different conversation, but in terms of the skill acquisition process with complete beginners, do you think it could be sped up? And if yes or if no, whether that should make or whether does it make any sort of difference to whether they carry on playing golf or not?
I think that's a great question. So I would throw a couple back to anyone listening to this. Is golf a game of skill or technique? And how, if it is a game of skill, then how do we develop that? So certainly by problem solving and games. I mean, if you look at books such as Play, and you read through things such as that, there is real merit in that, isn't there? In learning through games. Therefore, it's the art of a really good coach in the participation realm of teaching beginners to set up and facilitate an environment that actually enhances skill. So setting up clever tasks that people have got to, I mean, kind of stuff we do with juniors every Saturday, Sunday, and during the week, you know, setting up hoops, setting up drain pipes, that kind of stuff. Really fun challenges. You know, why can't a beginner work out how to get a 5-iron up over a 6-foot net from 3 foot away? You know, you make an assumption they can't do that. Well, yeah, these are intelligent human beings. I'm sure they will work out a way without us intervening. And therefore, is that not the essence of skill development? So I get somebody, a dear friend of mine, Kendall McWade with Instinctive Golf, doing, you know, a lot of people say, oh, these crazy things he sets up. And, well, you know, how mad is that? You know, because that's certainly... Is that not the development of skill? Having to bend the ball around poles, having to... I mean, these are the skills we need to play the game, aren't they? So, you know, by us putting them on a mat and force plates and cameras and telling them you must... You know, do we actually hurt them? Do we take away all that creativity? It's like an education, you know. It's a great question in schooling and education. Do we allow kids to be creative, or do we pigeonhole them and make them what they are? A great question. I don't have the answer. I'm just throwing it out there for anyone listening. You know, maybe it's something for us all to reflect on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is a nice, nice place to transition into the differences between participation coaching and performance coaching. Do you think there are any?
Yeah, I do. Massively. And I think maybe this is where... Certainly, I can only go on my own experience and what I've seen worldwide and what I've heard from good players and so forth. I think by the time you get to performance coaching, I don't know how you'd – what would you say performance coaching is? From what handicap? From
what's performance coaching? Good question. What would you say?
That's a bit of tennis there. I'll ping it back to you. What would you say? So to me, real performance coaching is somebody that has a goal, they're on a mission, normally wanting to become a professional or a scratch golfer. That's real to me, the real performance coaching. That's unfair because you might have somebody that plays off 23 that just wants to get to singles. That could be performance coaching. So I think it is it's a hard one to quantify.
Yeah.
And put people in a sort of pigeonhole, but to me, performance coaching is slightly different in that you probably want some kind of statistical data. So these people are playing a lot of golf. You actually want to look at the games as a whole. I feel those golfers have already explored their movement workspace, if that makes sense. They've already explored a lot. They've already developed skill, and maybe they've hit a ceiling. Or maybe they're in pain because the way that they've made sense to the game or the movement they've made actually compromises biomechanically how they move. So now anatomically they're in pain, let's say. So I think with performance coaching, it is slightly different because they come with very different questions. So they're no longer exploring as much. They do need more information and more answers. So that's, to me, where we might start looking at using 3D motion capture systems, TrackMan, and so forth, to actually give them better information. I'm not then saying that we get very deterministic and didactic in our instructions, start telling them this is what we must do, but we just give them different options and maybe help them out a bit more with why they're experiencing pain or why they're not delivering the club in the manner that they want to, and then again let them come up with some answers. But certainly using things like biofeedback on motion capture systems to again, I don't want to sound too academic here, but to destabilize those kind of attractors or to help them bust up the, you know, what people would call muscle memory, I guess. It's definitely a different animal, I feel, you're dealing with. You might have somebody that actually hits it great, so they've got all the skill in the world, but they're not quite scoring well. Well, as you well know, that could come down to something like green reading, a mental aspect, how they go about preparation, the practice, the planning, the pre-shot routines, the, oh gosh, you know, different ball game to me. But I definitely feel the big difference, just again, just to me, guys, anyone listening, you might not agree, but I do see a slight difference in the beginner who's exploring and being allowed to explore, and the more performance golfer who has explored but needs some different answers and different information. That would be my take on it.
Like we've discussed before, the sort of an argument that one could use is that the health aspect or the injury prevention aspect, you could ask that why wouldn't you focus on that, especially with beginners when they start playing golf. Like they need the perfect technique, because if they don't have the perfect technique, whatever that means, they're gonna get injured. Like I would imagine some people do use that that argument. How would you sort of discuss with it?
I think that's massively valid. And it's a great argument and a great point and a great discussion point around any dinner table. So with juniors, let's say, as an example, if they just get to explore, if the solution they come up with is one that's harmful, where does that leave us? And from an ethical standpoint, as a golf coach, are you doing the best job you could be if you just allow that to happen? Great question. And again, that's where I think you've got to be. The truth is, every human that's in front of you, it's a case study of one, isn't it? It's a blank sheet. And I think the art of the coach is, again, having that large toolbox and knowing when to bring the right tool out. So you might have a young golfer or any age, I guess, but so they've explored, they're quite skilled, but they're in pain. And that's where I feel a lot of the maybe the people that are very much so into this self-organization principles and learn through play maybe fall down a bit. It's okay, how are you going to deal with that then? Because now they're in a lot of pain, that they're only playing once every 2 months, that they're sick of the pain and they're going to give the game up. And that's where I feel absolutely that you'd have to, again, give them choice, though. Just say, here's the facts. This is why you're in pain. This is how you move. What do you think we should do about it? And invariably, if they come back with, I want to change this, then maybe you go down a slightly different path, which is less exploration and a bit more choice and a bit more. But again, you've given the player that they're in charge of that, aren't they? And they've had to make the decisions. But I would say it's a great question. And should there be an element of that in junior golf? Yeah, absolutely, in my opinion. At some point, you've got to start giving them choices and educating them on good anatomical movement. And obviously, the earlier you do it, so those movement patterns don't become too habitual, probably the better. So yeah, from, I don't know, from whatever age, depends on how much golf they play, but certainly the juniors from 11, 12, maybe that's a point where you can start educating them differently. Maybe not. Again, I'm not saying this is the way it is. I'm just throwing it out there for anyone listening and something for us all to reflect on again.
So I guess your point that it depends on how much golf they're playing is probably crucial when we talk about beginner golfers. So if they're only playing once in a while, it's unlikely that whatever moves they make will be harmful to them, I guess, unless they are like extreme.
I think all injuries are sort of 7 years, 5 years in the making. So invariably, at some point, they may well injure themselves. I think it's only ethical if you have that kind of information that you mention it. Yeah. But for a lot of golfers, I think they glaze over when they hear that. You know, let's face it. Let's say the golfer that plays once a month, they slice the ball. They come to you for help. I think, number one, a lot of the time they don't actually understand the physics behind why they slice it. So they need education on why exactly, through club delivery, the ball does what it does. Then they need to explore maybe slightly different club deliveries. I think for most, that's enjoyment for them, isn't it? If they come in for a lesson slicing the ball one moment, or push fading the ball one moment and leave hitting it with a little draw, I think that's a massive success story, and they're going to enjoy the game more. They're going to find more fairways and be more prone to want to play more golf. So, therefore, the coach has done a great job. You may well find, for instance, this is what I mean by it's so hard to, in a conversation like this without the golfer in front of you, to comment, because you may well find whilst they discover a different club delivery, they reorganize the movement system, and anatomically it's a more sound movement anyway. So, yeah, where does that leave us? It's a complex landscape, isn't it?
Yeah.
But injury is it's an area I'm passionate about. I've seen young golfers come through the county program that I'm involved in, get the tour cards, and then get injured. And then obviously struggle to keep tour cards or whatever through injury. Maybe that's something we need to take on the chin as a county and go... Whereas national programs ago, we didn't support them that well there.
It's such a complex issue, isn't it? And it's like the balance that each and every, like every coach with each and every student, like we need to find the balance between
absolutely
health, motivation, the skills.
A whole lot. And hence, you know, to me, every lesson, every program should have an individualized, organic nature. And secondly, my argument of a coach having a mass toolbox. You know, good coaches that are massively passionate about coaching will go through everything, get information on and qualifications in the body, in anatomy, in biomechanics, get information and qualifications in human learning and understanding about a constructivist approach versus a behaviorist approach, understand that stuff. I think as an industry, you know, anyone that's listening going, these words are just ridiculous. Well, no, I think as an industry, we need to upskill ourselves personally. And I think that's what the PGA are doing with these kind of level three and level four. And a lot of these new AGMS students that are coming out are wonderful, wonderful brains that kind of get that stuff. But another interesting, I suppose, sidetracking a bit here, but, you know, when we talk about as got coaches bowed and cupped wrists, and I mean, who the hell gets that in the medical world? You know, flexion extension or pronation, supination. They don't understand what we're talking about. And I think it's maybe we need to look at ourselves and think about upskilling ourselves and becoming better professionals if we want to be taken more seriously. Maybe. Again, just conversation points. I'm not on the soapbox there. These are just conversation points for us to reflect on. Should we be more upskilled? Yeah, probably. Mm.
To make coaching a true profession.
Absolutely. So again, let's look away from golf and let's start looking at, okay, Olympic coaches. Let's start looking at coaching in rugby. Let's start looking at, you know, look at the Olympians. I mean, they involve sports science. They involve psychs. They involve teams, don't they? And it seems to me that still in our industry, we're working as lone rangers, aren't we? And sometimes, you know, an awful lot of big egos there where people think they have all the answers. You know, people might go and do a 2-day course and then think they're qualified to start screening people and talking about the body. It's like, good Lord, no. Mm. I mean, that's just that's dangerous.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of it going on, isn't there?
Going back to the qualifications, what do you think of the level four, just out of interest? Because, like, I would imagine this is the way that the British PGA is going. What did you think of it?
I thought it was just one of the most wonderful experiences. I'll be honest, the first weekend, I drove away just thinking, oh, Greg, what have you done? You know, they were talking about ontology, epistemology, research methods. I thought, oh, my Lord, no, I've totally got this wrong. But 2 years later, once we'd been through the reflective processes that we had to go through, just what a quantum leap in certainly my own coaching and talking to everybody else in the class, from diverse sports, by the way, not just golf. I think it was one of the, just the most powerful experiences to go through. It was wonderful. Great reflective tool. I think I never now will sort of look at pseudoscience or self-professed gurus, you know, pick up a book and just buy into it. I'd always want to know, well, where's the research behind that? It certainly got me questioning things a lot more. I could not, it's not easy. I'm not going to say it was easy having three young kids at home. There was a lot of mornings. I was up until 4 a.m. on the keyboard and reading a lot, and it was tough. But I'd advise anyone listening that you go and do that, go through that process. Hard, but so worth it. Just wonderful. And the more coaches that we have that are level four, again, the more as an industry, as a profession, if we can talk academically, if we can talk in terms of physiology to people, I think the more respect we'll get as coaches.
Are there any people that come to your mind when you think about participation coaching? This could be golf coaches, but like they don't have to be involved in golf at all. Is there someone like an expert coach or someone that you think, for example, I might invite to this podcast?
Oh, wow. I mean, so Neil Plimmer, you've already had on.
Yeah.
Kendall McQuaid.
It's instinctive golf, isn't it?
Yeah, Kendall's just wonderful. I mean, you talk for hours with Kendall about this stuff. Yeah. So amazing. Paul Eales. Yep. So Paul's fascinating. Paul's very involved with instinctive golf, but he's been a tour professional. He's been a national coach. Really interesting guy to talk to. Yeah, there's a few people out there that are I guess you could call them specialists. I don't know if you've touched base with Richard Shaw.
I'm actually speaking to him in a few days.
Oh, yeah, Rich. I mean, he's doing some wonderful work with community golf. Just unbelievable. So he'll be fascinating to talk to. I mean, he really is in the trenches there. I mean, he's out in the trenches, in the parks with people. What a great job. And he'd be really interested to listen to, for sure.
Is there anything that we missed that you think we should have spoken about?
No, I think the problem is we could talk all day long, couldn't we?
Yeah.
I think it's I hope I haven't come across, anyone listening, I hope I haven't come across as standing on the soapbox. That's not the way I've meant to come across. These are only, of course, one person's opinion, mine. That's all it is, just an opinion. But I hope more than anything, some of the areas that we've touched on today can be instigators of self-reflection for anyone listening. You know, if you're involved in an academy, if you're the head coach of an academy, what is the experience of a junior golfer or a beginner golfer in your program? Do you have elite level young golfers that have gone through your program that are now injured? And hopefully it's just a big reflective tool for people, I'd hope, more than anything. And I think the more we can go through these kind of conversations together, where people let down the barriers, put their ego aside, and are just willing to talk about, I know people have their beliefs, and certainly some people have systems that they swear by, that's fine, okay, that's fine, but all I'm saying is let's have a little bit more of a balanced conversation about it. And I think the more we do that as a profession, the more we upskill ourselves, and the better we get at understanding how humans learn and the experience they're getting, the better chance we have of this game surviving. Because that's my biggest fear, is that we end up with very, very small numbers playing this game. And that would be the biggest travesty of all for all of us, because then it all becomes irrelevant. But I'd like to thank you so much. I think the work you're doing is absolutely wonderful, truly amazing. And I know, as a, you know, you're one of these bright young star coaches that I'm sure I'm going to really look forward to watching you develop over the next 20 years. And I think you'll do some amazing work. And the more guys like you there are on the planet, the better shape this game is. I know that much.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. It's only because I have a chance to speak to people like you.
No, it's the fact that you facilitate that. Let's be under no illusions. my friend, you do exactly what I do. Get on planes and go and see people face to face, have dinner with them, hang out with them. I think you learn far more there than you ever would in a classroom. So what you're doing is wonderful. I love the fact that you're specializing in participation. I think that is undeniably the future. And if we can build a big base in the pyramid, we'll have a game to. I just hope along the way, one final reflection of mine is we don't lose the game along the way, that it changes so much that it's no longer, you know, people talk about 6 holes, 12 holes. People talk about bigger holes and making the game. I just hope we don't lose the wonderful game of golf and you know, what it stands for and the life skills that it gives young people. I hope we don't get too far away from that, but we've really got to look at the model and look at what we're doing would be my closing comments.
When you look at other sports like cricket and the way they're changing.
2020, yeah. Who knows? You know, look at the gaming industry now. I mean, there's actually football clubs in the Premier League in England that now have professional gamers. Will golf become... And will simulator technology become so good that there's actually international championships on simulators? Maybe. I just hope that we don't lose. And the other thing, I guess, is we don't really play enough on the fitness aspect, do we? For people that are not into going to the gym, lifting weights, running, and that kind of, you know, golf is a great calorie burner. It's a great form of exercise. And I don't know if we necessarily – I can't remember the last time I read in an article about how many calories you burn in the average round of golf. Not to mention the life skills that I feel we can teach. I'm not knocking football. My sons play football. I love the game. But certainly when you look at football's teaching kids to question authority, that it's okay to cheat, and golf teaches integrity, perseverance, respect – I feel that's something we need to start playing, tugging on the heartstrings a lot more with, because golf can teach kids some wonderful life skills, and I hope we don't lose them.
I guess the health aspects, there's this new project that's being developed right now. It's Golf and Health, I think, a golf health project, and they will try to promote the health aspects of golf. I think it's around with the RNA or...
There you go. It's always the way, isn't it? That's something else I found in life. Whenever you think about something or come up with an idea... You think, oh, that'd be good that someone's doing it. They're already on it. It's like, oh, God damn it.
Awesome, Greg. Thank you very much. What would be the best way for people to find you or to get in touch with you if they wanted to find out more about you or read some of your stuff? I know you've published quite a few things.
Yeah, probably to log on to my website, gregbrodygolf.com, and you can get a contact there. And by all means, yeah, I'd love to hear from you and love to hear people's thoughts on what we've discussed today. And it would be great to get some kind of a online mastermind group going where people stop bouncing ideas around as regards to this stuff. And like I say, there'll be strength in numbers. The more forward thinking, less egotistical people we have, the better for the sake of golf. And I think between us, there's a lot of real bright stars out there. Between us, we could come up with some wonderful ideas for sure and really move this game, this wonderful game forward. Again, it comes back to working as a team rather than these lone rangers. You know, I'd love to be involved in some kind of online group where somebody could post up, did this with the kids today. Look at this game that I set up. A lot of the time with the juniors, I get them to set up games. Imagine posting that. This is what they came up with. Or sitting a group of kids down. I mean, I don't know if you do that, but sit them down and say, right, what would be fun? What would you want to do today? And actually giving them the choice and then posting that and sharing it with a community of people that are a beginner golfer. The other one, I'm sorry to rant on here.
No problem.
The other one is feedback. How often do we get really good feedback from people? And I wonder if that's because they people are polite and they don't want to insult you. So there's another one that, you know, someone like you could set up. How about a anonymous almost blog where people could post their experiences of what they went through as a beginner golfer, just anonymously, not naming the coach, no naming and shaming, but just that we could start reading through the feedback and picking out, my gosh, right, I'm guilty of that in my coaching. I'm going to change that. So wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get some feedback from the newcomers to the game on what they like and don't like? Because how often do we do that? I've never read anything like that. And that kind of information is invaluable.
The good news is, going back to the point that people have already done many things that we think of, with the junior stuff, the Neil Plymouth Junior Golf Alliance,
yeah.
Part of the membership is you get access to the Facebook group where this is what's happening over there. Like, people post their sessions and the games they develop, which is awesome, which I love. So with the junior stuff, it is happening, thankfully. Only now, like only for a few months. But not much going on with the beginner players.
No, interesting. Just feedback might be key. And you're right, I've really got to get up to speed on the Junior Alliance stuff. That's on my hit list.
Greg, thanks again. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
This is Wojciech again. Thanks so much for listening. If you have any sort of comments, feedback, whatever, shoot me an email at hi@participationcoaching.com. Or you can go to the website, participationcoaching.com, and comment below this podcast episode. On the website, you can also sign up for the mailing list. So if you want to subscribe and receive the updates of all the new episodes on your email, no spam, go to participationcoaching.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you could share it with your network. And after all, the more people know about this sort of stuff, the better off we all will be. So thanks again for listening. And I'll see you next time.